Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the one, the only Sean Sports Talk podcast. That is right. I'm so excited for this episode. I mean, I am so excited for every episode. I cannot describe how excited and how much I love doing this podcast, how much I love, you know, reading about and talking about, writing about, just living, breathing sports. I mean, I wouldn't have a sports podcast with 440 plus episodes at the age of 20, you know, if I didn't love sports. So with all that said, I'm not going to waste any more time. Let's get right into it because we have so much to talk about, starting with Super Bowl 58. I mean, what else? What could be bigger right now on February 2nd, 2024 than Super Bowl 58? A rematch of Super Bowl 54, as stated previously, between the Kansas City Chiefs and the San Francisco 49ers. The Chiefs edged the Baltimore Ravens 17-10 on the road in Baltimore. It was a game that I thought the Ravens lost more than the Chiefs won. It was a game that I was watching. I was perplexed watching this game. I could not understand and still do not understand why Lamar Jackson absolutely refused to use his greatest strength, his greatest attribute, and that is being the mobile quarterback that he is, you know, running out of the pocket and making plays happen by himself. Instead, he was just sitting all day in the pocket looking for a pass, and there were none. And I mean, even during the game, Odell Beckham Jr., you know, Rams legend, Super Bowl champion, shout out to the GOAT, he was asking Lamar, like, what the fuck are you doing, bro? Like, take off, you know? Like, the game changes once you take off, and obviously it does. I mean, Lamar Jackson will almost certainly be the league's MVP this season, I would presume, and he's already won an MVP before. But anyway, back to the Super Bowl 58. The 49ers came back from they erased the 17-point deficit at home against the Detroit Lions. They were the top seed in the NFC, and they looked like one of the top teams in the league this season. Now, they're only one win away from being Super Bowl champions. Their path to the Super Bowl was not an easy one. They survived the divisional round against the all-of-a-sudden red-hot Green Bay Packers, you know, a team that looked mid as fuck to me the whole season, but really turned it on at the right time. I mean, they absolutely blew out, raped the Dallas Cowboys on the road. That was shocking. I mean, when I saw that the Cowboys were massive, massive favorites and 80% of the money was on them, I knew that it would at least be a close game. And if my life was on the line, if there was a gun to my head, I would take the Packers just because of the aforementioned reasons and the fact that the Dallas Cowboys choke, you know, every single year, no matter how good of a team they have. But I did not expect the Packers to blow out the Cowboys the way they did. So riding that momentum, they gave the 49ers a tough game, but the 49ers survived in the divisional round. And then, like I just said, came back from a 17-point deficit against the Detroit Lions in the NFC Championship game. The Chiefs were the 3 seed in the AFC. They had to get through a pair of road tests on their way to a 4th Super Bowl in 5 years. I mean, it's truly astounding. I thought that the NFL would really kind of open up as far as new teams after the conclusion of the New England Patriots dynasty, the era of Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, Rob Gronkowski, Julian Edelman. But now it's the Chiefs. It's Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, Travis Kelce. You know, used to be Tyreek Hill. He's since, got traded to the Dolphins. But here are the odds. The 49ers are slight favorites. They're 2-point favorites. On the money line, they are minus 125, while the Chiefs come in at plus 105. The over-under is 47.5. I would smash that over. That's probably my favorite bet. In case you don't know, the Super Bowl is Sunday, February 11th at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 3:30 p.m. Pacific. And it is being played at the Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas, Nevada. The real losers here are the Raiders and Raiders fans, because two of their biggest rivals, the 49ers and their divisional rival, the Chiefs, are playing in their home stadium, in their stadium for the Super Bowl. So like I said, this is a rematch of Super Bowl 54, where the Chiefs won 31-20. The Chiefs came into Sunday's AFC Championship game as an underdog, but Mahomes said the Chiefs never feel like underdogs. As far as the odds are concerned, though, they are underdogs once again, although it is, you know, very close to being even odds. But the 49ers are slight favorites, Chiefs are slight underdogs. Compared to the last three Chiefs teams that reached the Super Bowl, this one didn't dominate throughout the season and faced plenty of doubt heading into the postseason. I mean, I'm going to be honest, I almost wrote off this year's Chiefs team. I was firm. I mean, they like I just said, they were not as good as the previous Chiefs teams that made the Super Bowl? Not at all. They were quite mediocre, in my opinion, for, you know, many times throughout the season. I did not think they would make the Super Bowl at all. I thought they would lose to a team like Baltimore, Buffalo. I mean, I was really surprised that the Bills, you know, couldn't finally exercise their demons with the Kansas City Chiefs and lost to them yet again. Where was I? Kansas City proved this year, however, that any team coached by Andy Reid and led by Patrick Mahomes under center has a fighting chance. San Francisco came into the season hungry for a Super Bowl, and the 49ers have looked like one of the top teams in football all year. Led by star running back Christian McCaffrey and promising quarterback, he's always Mr. Irrelevant, Brock Purdy, the 49ers certainly have what it takes to keep up with Kansas City's electric offense. With a powerful offense and a more than capable defense, the 49ers will look to avenge the Super Bowl loss from 2019. However, Patrick Mahomes and company will look to, you know, improve to 2-0 against the 49ers in Super Bowls. And I think the latter is what will happen. I think the Chiefs will win a close game. I think it'll be a one-possession game, somewhere along the lines of 28-21 to, you know, just go over the 47.5. That is my prediction for Super Bowl 58. Chiefs win it 28-21. Let's see. What do we have next? We, believe it or not, despite the NBA and NHL trade deadlines being around the corner and us being on the cusp of Super Bowl 58, the next story that we will talk about, or I will talk about, is actually MLB. The Minnesota Twins have traded second baseman Jorge Polanco to the Seattle Mariners, according to Jeff Passan of ESPN. The 30-year-old, who was an all-star in 2019, hit .255 with 14 homers, 48 RBIs during his 2023 season, while appearing in only 80 games, so about half the season. According to The Athletic, Minnesota will get relief pitcher Justin Topa, starting pitcher Anthony DeSclafani, Giants legend, outfield prospect Gabriel Gonzalez, right-handed pitching prospect Darren Bowen, and cash in return. So a very solid return for the Twins, no doubt. This is the second time that DeSclafani has been moved this offseason, as he was part of the package that the Mariners got for trading former Cy Young winner Robbie Ray to the San Francisco Giants, hence why I just said Giants legend, on January 5th. As for Gonzalez, he ranked as Seattle's number 3 prospect in 2023 and is number 79 overall per MLB.com. In 73 games for the single-A Modesto Nuts, he hit .348 with 9 homers and 8 stolen bases. Although the Twins exercised their 2024 club option on Polanco worth $10.5 million, his name has appeared in trade rumors all offseason. People around the industry believe there's a very strong chance that the Twins will in fact move Jorge Polanco this winter. That was said by John Morosi of MLB Network. One of the main reasons his tenure with Minnesota came to an end was the phenomenal rookie season of Edouard Julian, who also plays second base. The 24-year-old hit .263, so he had a higher batting average than the veteran and former All-Star Polanco with 16 homers in 109 games, posting an .839 OPS while finishing 7th in American League in Rookie of the Year voting. As for Seattle, Polanco gives the Mariners a productive bat in the middle of the team's lineup, who has shown he still has lots of power at the plate when healthy. In 2021, where he played almost a full season, he hit .33 homers. The Mariners appeared to be heading into the season with Josh Rojas at second base prior to the deal. He maintained a commendable, very solid .272 batting average with the team in 2023, although he's not even close to the power hitter that Polanco is. Polanco, in 134 plate appearances with Seattle, Rojas only hit 4 homers. After a 10-year career in Minnesota, Polanco is heading to Seattle. I think it's a rare win-win trade that's beneficial for both sides, and I'm excited to see Jorge Polanco in the Mariners lineup alongside the likes of Julio Rodriguez, J.P. Crawford, you know, Cal Rowley and company. Switching gears to the WWE, I'm not sure if you guys would consider this a sport or not, but I think it's noteworthy enough and close enough to be discussed. Just as CM Punk's return to WWE got into full swing, things reached a screeching halt. During this week's episode of Monday Night Raw, CM Punk confirmed reports that he suffered a torn tricep and he will be forced to miss WrestleMania 40. That is very unfortunate. Reports surfaced on Monday that Punk suffered the injury during the Men's Royal Rumble match at Saturday's premium live event in Tampa, Florida, which was his first televised match in WWE since 2014, which also coincidentally happened to be the Royal Rumble as well. Mike Johnson of PW Insider reported that Punk is, quote, believed to be heading toward surgery following his appearance on Raw. Johnson added that the belief is that Punk will be facing 4 to 6 months of recovery and physical therapy, with a return to the ring in the summer being his best case scenario. The injury ends the hype of Punk's WWE comeback, which many thought was out of the realm of possibility when he left the company nearly a decade ago. Fans were blown away by his return at Survivor Series in November, and it appeared that big things were on the horizon for him. Punk had immediately put himself in position for a feud with WWE World Heavyweight Champion Seth Rollins. Even though Cody Rhodes won the Royal Rumble match for the second year in a row, there was an expectation that Punk would challenge Rollins for his title in one of the main events of WrestleMania 40, which will be held on April 6th and April 7th. Now the WWE will have to pivot
and to find a new opponent for Seth Rollins at this year's marquee event. This isn't the first time that Punk's return to the ring ended unceremoniously. Prior to coming back to the WWE, he spent two volatile years in AEW during a run that was marred by injuries and backstage incidents. He also suffered a torn tricep in September 2022 after he won the AEW World Championship at the All Out pay-per-view. He relinquished the title and was suspended for his involvement in a backstage brawl with Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks after the event. His contract was terminated in September 2023 after his involvement in yet another backstage altercation. The 45-year-old... Wow. It is absolutely insane that CM Punk is 45 years old. The 45-year-old is one of the most popular wrestlers in the world. But at his age, his days in wrestling, hopefully or not, but appear possibly to be numbered. So very unfortunate for everyone involved, except maybe CM Punk haters. And with that, we are going to switch gears back to the NFL.
The New England Patriots do not plan on picking up quarterback Mac Jones's fifth-year option following the 2024 season, per Mass Live. Jones is entering the final season of a four-year $15.6 million contract that gives the Patriots a fifth-year option for him in 2025. Quote, according to a source, the Patriots don't plan on picking up Jones's fifth-year option. The quarterback has a clean slate with head coach Jared Mayo and could remain on the roster, but the team won't hesitate to move him if the right deal comes across their desk. I'm not sure who would be interested in Mac Jones at this point. I feel like his trade value is at an all-time low.
At this point, Jones struggled in his third NFL season and was ultimately benched four times for Bailey Zappe. Now it seems that his future with the Patriots is uncertain, to say the least.
In 11 games this season, Jones threw for 2,120 yards, 10 touchdowns, but 12 interceptions with a completion percentage of 64.9. Let's see. His best season remains his rookie year when he recorded 3,801 yards, 22 touchdowns to only 13 interceptions, starting all 17 games for the Patriots and leading them to the playoffs. I mean,
Mac Jones, like I just said, showed promise as a rookie, and it's been very unfortunate to see how bad he's been compared to his rookie season. Not only has he shown very little progress since his rookie season, but I think it's clear that he's regressed, which is obviously not good. In his 3 years in the NFL, Jones has had three different offensive coordinators, so that obviously does not help progression and development in any way, shape, or form. He will have a fourth next season, even if he stays in New England, as Bill O'Brien left to join Ryan Day's staff at Ohio State. The inconsistency has certainly weighed on the young quarterback and has likely been a reason for his lack of development. Now, Jones is looking to grow despite a rocky start. According to the report, Jones has looked to other quarterbacks who struggled in the early stages of their careers for a framework for how he can write his own and, you know, steer the ship. Quote, Jones has taken a realistic approach to what this season has meant for his future. The quarterback has even spoken about Geno Smith's journey and relayed inside Gillette Stadium to one source that his path might be like the veteran quarterback. After struggling in his first two seasons in New York, it took Smith 8 years to get another starting job. So hopefully it won't take that long for Mac Jones, for his sake. But yeah, I mean, hopefully he can figure it out soon. We got more football to talk about. Mr. Dan Campbell, the Detroit Lions.
Detroit Lions head coach Dan Campbell said he, quote, gambled and lost with his decision to run the ball on third down late in the fourth quarter of the NFC Championship game. Not only did he run the ball, but he also went for it multiple times on fourth down when perhaps the better option was to kick a field goal or not go for it on fourth down, at least. If you don't know, for context, on third and goal from the 49ers' one-yard line, Campbell put the ball into the hands of running back David Montgomery. Montgomery lost 2 yards when he only needed one for the touchdown. But more costly was the fact that the Lions had to burn a timeout. Quote, yeah, look, the easy thing to do is throw it. Pete probably should have been the right thing, but for me, I wanted to run it. I thought we would just pop it. We just ran a two-minute drill all the way down the field, throwing the football, and they were in a four-down front. I believed we'd walk right in. We just missed a block, so then, yeah, I've got to use a timeout. He added that he'd throw it four times with the benefit of hindsight, but I believed in that moment it was going to be a walk and run, and it didn't work out, so I gambled and lost.
I mean, you can't blame him, when running the ball from the one-yard line. I'm not sure how you can call this the wrong call, how you can label this the wrong call or wrong decision. and then simultaneously say that the Seahawks should have ran the ball instead of throwing from the 1 yard line in their Super Bowl loss to the New England Patriots several years ago. It doesn't make sense. I mean, if you're at the 1 yard line, you should run the ball even on third down, probably not on fourth down, but you know, I don't think Dan Campbell deserves much blame. I mean, say what you want about how he coaches, his style or what have you, but at the end of the day, he's been the coach of a Detroit Lions team that won 0-16. Then the following season, which was last season, a team that just barely missed the playoffs. And now a team that, you know, week one rolled into Kansas City, beat the Chiefs, and ultimately ended up, you know, winning the NFC North for the first time ever, making the NFC Championship game, being that close to a Super Bowl appearance. So I don't think Dan Campbell deserves any blame, to be honest, whatsoever. While Jared Goff hit Jameson Williams for a 3-yard touchdown pass to make it a 34-31 game, Detroit did not have enough timeouts to get the ball back. After recovering the onside kick, the 49ers ran off the final 56 seconds to seal their win and ultimately a trip to the Super Bowl. So, like I said, I don't blame Dan Campbell at all, at all. With that said, this next story is a meme, if we're honest. We're going to talk about Rajon Rondo. Former NBA star Rajon Rondo was arrested Sunday in Indiana and charged with multiple misdemeanors following a traffic stop. According to WDRB, Indiana State Police spokesman Sergeant Stephen Wheels said Rondo was stopped for a traffic violation in Jackson County, Indiana, and was searched after a trooper smelled marijuana. Isn't that how it always starts? The trooper found a gun, a, quote, personal use amount of marijuana, and drug paraphernalia, leading to Rondo's arrest. Rondo, who is not permitted to be in possession of a firearm due to a no-contact order being taken out against him, was charged with unlawful possession of a firearm, drug paraphernalia, and marijuana. The 37-year-old immediately posted bond among arriving at Jackson County Jail, and he was released from custody. An emergency order of protection was taken out against Rondo in 2022 by a Louisville, Kentucky woman after she alleged that he, quote, became enraged and threatened her life. Following an argument with the woman and allegedly causing damage to her property, Rondo told her, quote, you're dead, per the woman. He is also said to have tapped on her window with a gun, frightening her and her children. The emergency protection order was dismissed in June 2022, but a new one was agreed upon in August 2023. Rondo started collegiately at Kentucky before going 21st overall in the 2006 NBA draft. He spent his first 9 NBA seasons with the Boston Celtics, earning 4 All-Star selections and winning an NBA championship. He later went on to play for the Dallas Mavericks, Sacramento Kings, Chicago Bulls, New Orleans Pelicans, Los Angeles Lakers, Atlanta Hawks, Los Angeles Clippers, and Cleveland Cavaliers in an NBA career that spanned 16 seasons. He won a second NBA title with the Lakers, the team that was his biggest rival for many years, being a Celtic, and the team that he beat in the 2008 NBA Finals. He won in the bubble with the Lakers in 2020, and he last appeared in an NBA game with the Cavaliers in 2022. So hopefully Rondo gets right. Hopefully he is all good. And with that, we are switching gears right back to the NFL. Sean Payton and Pete Carmichael will reportedly reunite with the Denver Broncos. According to NOLA.com, the Broncos are expected to hire the former New Orleans Saints offensive coordinator as a senior offensive assistant. Payton, who is the current Broncos head coach and former Saints head coach, was the one who initially hired Carmichael in New Orleans all the way back in 2006. Carmichael was an offensive assistant for the Cleveland Browns, Washington Commanders, and San Diego Chargers before he was hired as the Saints quarterbacks coach. He was promoted to offensive coordinator in 2009 and held that role for the past 15 years. It didn't take long for him to find success as the Saints won the Super Bowl in his first season as offensive coordinator, with quarterback Drew Brees leading the way. That was one of 8 playoff appearances during his tenure as offensive coordinator for the Saints. While many of those offenses were among the best in the league, that hasn't been the case of late for the Saints. They missed the postseason, or should I say the Aints, they missed the postseason the last 3 years and finished 28th in the league in yards in 2021, 19th in 2022, and 14th in 2023, so at least they've been steadily improving, even though they have not been good. Yet Payton is familiar with Carmichael and is giving him an opportunity to help lead a turnaround for the Broncos. Denver went a very mid 8-9 in 2023, which was Payton's first year as their head coach, and the second season for quarterback Russell Wilson, the former Seahawks quarterback in the AFC. There are questions about whether Wilson will be released this offseason, especially after Diana Rossini of The Athletic reported in December that he was expected to be cut in March. That could allow Payton and Carmichael to build a new offense after the Broncos finished 26th in the league in yards in 2023, much worse than their former team, the Saints. Denver has the number 12 pick in the draft and could look to bring in a rookie or turn toward a veteran in free agency. So We'll see how the Broncos do. I think they might be a playoff team, but I don't see them doing much next season. That said, we are transitioning to some basketball. This is very, very interesting. An exciting competition is coming to NBA All-Star Weekend in Indianapolis next month. Golden State Warriors star point guard Steph Curry and New York Liberty star point guard Sabrina Ionescu will participate in a three-point shootout that will surely produce fireworks. The one-on-one challenge will take place after the league three-point contest February 17th and will be held at Lucas Oil Stadium, the home of the Indianapolis Colts. According to the rules provided by the NBA, Curry will shoot from the NBA three-point line with NBA basketballs, while Ionescu will shoot from the WNBA three-point line with WNBA basketballs. Sabrina said she'll shoot from the NBA line, though. I mean, shout out to her. She's a legend. On January 25th, Curry hinted at the possibility of going up against Ionescu when he was mic'd up during the pregame for a matchup against the Sacramento Kings, saying, quote, "I think I got to bring her out. We got to settle this once and for all." So he challenged her. Ionescu won the 2023 WNBA three-point contest with an astonishing performance in which she made 25 out of her 27 attempts and finished with 37 points, which is the most in WNBA or NBA history. Absolutely unbelievable. To no one's surprise, Steph Curry set the previous mark of 31 points when he won the NBA three-point contest for the second time in 2021. His first win came in 2015, which was also the year of his first NBA championship with the Golden State Warriors. Ionescu first suggested an intergender three-point contest after her win last summer, saying, quote, "shootout" with two question marks and a crying laughing emoji and tagging Stephen Curry on Twitter. This was on July 14th, 2023. The tweet has 28.6 thousand likes. Curry didn't take long to accept her challenge, responding on July 17th, saying that he and Sabrina need to settle who's the best three-point competition shooter, saying, quote, "I gotta go after Sabrina's record. She went crazy with the 37 points in their All-Star weekend." Of course, this is obviously the first time that a WNBA player participates in a three-point contest against an NBA player. WNBA stars have routinely participated in NBA All-Star Weekend in the past, usually as part of the celebrity game and the shooting stars competition. Curry was not voted as a starter for the Western Conference in this year's All-Star game, but it's expected that he will earn his 10th All-Star selection. If he is selected, it will mark the first time that he will play in the game as a reserve and not a starter. So that will be very exciting. Honestly, I would not be surprised if Sabrina is able to win. Now we're switching gears right back to the NFL and the Detroit Lions. Lions fans are surely still upset about how their season ended, but there is some good news for the Lions fans. Ben Johnson, their offensive coordinator, told the Seattle Seahawks and Washington Commanders that he plans to stay with the Lions. Quote, "Johnson is still only 37 and will be a hot head coaching candidate again next year, but first he wants to take another shot at bringing a Lombardi trophy to Detroit. Very admirable." While Johnson was one of the most discussed candidates during his coaching cycle, Adam Schefter of ESPN reported he was, quote, "not the head coaching lock that people thought, and his asking price spooked some teams." Perhaps he just wanted to stay in Detroit and was, you know, using his asking price as leverage. Washington and Seattle were the only two teams with vacancies. More on their filled vacancies soon. Now we are going to talk about more NBA All-Star Weekend. The future of the NBA is in the hands of a pair of giants, as San Antonio Spurs center Victor Wembanyama and Oklahoma City Thunder center Chet Holmgren headline the pool of players set to participate in the 2024 Rising Stars Challenge. So NBA sophomores, meaning NBA players in their second season, include Paolo Banchero, Dyson Daniels, Jalen Duren, Jaden Ivey, Walker Kessler, Benedict Mathurin, Keegan Murray, Shaedon Sharpe, Jabari Smith Jr., and Jalen Williams. NBA rookies include Bilal Coulibaly, Kevontae George, Jordan Hawkins, Scoot Henderson, Chet Holmgren, Jaime Jaquez Jr., Derek Lively II, Brandon Miller, Brandon Pajimski, Kaysen Wallace, and Victor Wembanyama. And NBA G Leaguers include Izan Almansa, Matas Buzelis, Ron Holland, Mac McClung, last year's dunk contest champion, Tyler Smith, Oscar Chibwe, and Alondes Williams. Wembanyama and Holmgren have established themselves as the frontrunners for Rookie of the Year honors with their impressive performances on both ends of the floor. Wemby obviously being the 2023 number one overall pick and most hyped prospect since LeBron James, leads the league with 3.1 blocks a game while also averaging 20.5 points, 10 rebounds, 3 assists, and 1.1 steals a game. Holmgren was the number two pick in the 2022 draft, who missed all of his rookie season, or all of his first season, I should say, with a foot injury. He's averaging 17 points on 53.3% shooting, along with 7.5 rebounds, almost 3 assists, and 2.6 blocks, the latter of which ranks 4th in the NBA.
The two of them faced off for the second time this season last week, with Chet's Thunder coming away with a blowout 140-114 win. They put on a show that even got chippy at times, making it clear that Chet versus Wemby will be an exciting rivalry to watch for years to come. Brandon Miller hasn't got much attention while playing on a Charlotte Hornets team that ranks near the bottom of the NBA, but the 2023 number two pick has quietly had a solid season with averages of 15 points, 4 rebounds, and over 2 assists a game. There have been a few surprises this year among first-year players. Golden State Warriors guard Brandon Pozimski, Miami Heat forward Jaime Jaquez Jr., no surprise to me, and Dallas Mavericks center Derek Lively II are among those who have excelled in their roles for their respective teams. The top second-year players will also be participating in the Rising Stars Challenge, with Orlando Magic star and 2023 Rookie of the Year Paolo Banchero headlining the group of sophomores. Fans will also enjoy getting a look at some of the brightest players the G League has to offer, including G League Ignite stars Matas Buzelis and Ron Holland, who are both in contention to be selected with the number one pick in the 2024 NBA Draft. This year's Rising Stars Challenge will feature a mini-tournament with 4 teams and 3 games. The 21 NBA rookies and sophomores will be drafted onto 3 7-player teams, with the 7 G League players making up the 4th squad. The teams will be coached by WNBA legend Tamika Catchings and former NBA stars Pau Gasol, Jalen Rose, and Detlef Schrempf. Catchings, Gasol, and Rose will draft their teams on February 6th. Games will be played to a final target score of 40 in the semifinals and 25 in the final. The games will be played on Friday, February 16th at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific at Gainbridge Fieldhouse in Indianapolis. Let's see. Now we got a huge NFL story to talk about. Many people absolutely loved Greg Olsen during his time as analyst on Fox for NFL games. But the era of Greg Olsen is over, and the era of Tom Brady is now. Tom Brady will officially step into the broadcasting booth in 2024, but like I just said, he will be replacing a fan favorite. Per Michael McCarthy of Front Office Sports, Brady confirms he will join Fox as the network's lead NFL game analyst for the 2024 season. Former tight end Greg Olsen, who excelled in the role this season, will drop down to the number two crew. Brady will be working alongside Fox's number one play-by-play announcer, Kevin Burkhardt. The expectation is that Olsen will call games with Joe Davis, which I actually love. Joe Davis is an amazing MLB commentator. He's the Los Angeles Dodgers commentator, so I personally love that Joe Davis will be with Greg Olsen now. That's going to be great. Definitely a silver lining. Not sure if it's much of a silver lining for Greg Olsen as he's getting demoted, but it's a silver lining for me for sure. Quote, I believe I can provide a pretty unique perspective that I think a lot of people will really like. It's going to be a lot of hard work. It's going to be a lot of fun, Brady told McCarthy. It's always about challenging yourself to grow in different areas, and this is certainly one way that I'm doing it. Yeah, I mean, for sure, this is something that obviously Tom Brady has never done. The legendary quarterback signed a massive 10-year, $375 million contract with Fox in May 2022. But there was a lack of clarity as to when he would be ready to join the network as its top color as its top analyst. He took a quote-unquote gap year after his retirement to prepare for the position. I mean, so that's just the Brady way. I mean, he doesn't go into anything without being prepared for it. Brady said he has, quote, already developed a great rapport with Burkhardt. McCarthy pointed out that a three-man booth would have been an option similar to how Fox brought Troy Aikman along with Joe Buck and Chris Collinsworth 22 years ago. Olsen earned praise throughout this season, leading some to believe that he deserved to remain with the lead broadcast team. Quote, I love Greg. Greg's done an incredible job, and he's got a great future and great career. Obviously already had one as a player, had one as a broadcaster, and anything Greg puts his mind to, he's going to be incredibly successful as well, Brady said. Brady has met with Fox executives and new colleagues like Aaron Andrews. He's also reached out to other broadcasters like Troy Aikman for advice. Quote, a lot of studying, a lot of research, a lot of talking to a lot of friends who are in the business and that have gone through their own growing pains, he said of his prep, reaching out to some of the best in the industry that have given me some great advice, and then just going in there and just doing dry runs in practice. It's been really fun. It's been a different challenge. Fortunately, I think there's a database of knowledge that's been built up over 23 years of sitting in meeting rooms and being in game plan meetings. So I am very excited to see how Tom Brady fits, you know, as an analyst. It's going to be very interesting to see. Speaking of interesting, the Baltimore Orioles have been sold. After more than 3 decades of ownership, the Angelos family is reportedly moving on from the Baltimore Orioles. David Rubenstein and Mike Arrighetti have agreed to purchase the MLB franchise for $1.725 billion, according to Puck News. Peter Angelos has been the majority owner of the Orioles since 1993. The regime has not yielded much success, with Baltimore making only 6 playoff appearances and winning only 3 American League East crowns, though one did come in 2023.
The future of the franchise has been up in the air since Angelos became incapacitated in 2017 after a fall. Infighting among the Angelos family has led to inconsistent leadership and a payroll that routinely ranks among the lowest in baseball, much to the ire of the Orioles faithful. Baltimore ranks 29th in payroll for the 2024 season, behind only the very depressing Oakland Athletics, who are in the midst of a bitter move to Las Vegas. The Orioles have regularly ranked last or next to last in payroll for more than half a decade. Fans will undoubtedly be thrilled to have the ownership group change, and it's a virtual certainty that Baltimore will see an increase in cash flow. I mean, huge for them. It feels like the Angelos family kind of wanted to strike while the iron was hot with the Orioles. You know, they just made the playoffs. People are talking about them. It's a young, exciting team. Rubenstein is a Baltimore native who has a net worth of $3.7 billion, according to Forbes, while Arrighetti has amassed a fortune of $1.8 billion. Rubenstein reportedly plans to buy 40% of the Orioles before Angelo's death, at which point he will complete the purchase for the remaining shares. So a very exciting time for fans of the Baltimore Orioles. Speaking of Baltimore, we're going to talk about the beef involving Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, and Ravens kicker, possibly all-time GOAT kicker, Justin Tucker. The run-in between Kansas City Chiefs stars Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Baltimore Ravens kicker Justin Tucker before Sunday's AFC Championship game became a viral moment that drew a ton of attention. Kelce explained his side of the story while speaking with his brother Jason Kelce on Wednesday's episode of the New Heights podcast presented by Wave Sports Plus Entertainment, saying he believes Tucker broke an unwritten rule when he was getting in the way of Mahomes' warm-up routine. Quote, "If you're trying to go onto the other team's designated area, you kind of stay out of their way. You don't interfere with what they have going on. That's the unwritten rule," Kelce said. "If you want to be a fucking dick about it, you keep your helmet and your football and your fucking kicking tree right where the quarterbacks are warming up. Like, if you're not going to pick that up, I'll happily move that for you." Kelce did just that, throwing Tucker's helmet and kicking balls out of Mahomes' way. Mahomes also tossed Tucker's kicking tee out of the area. The Chiefs went on to defeat the Ravens, like I said earlier, 17-10, to earn their fourth trip to the Super Bowl in 5 years. Tucker said on Monday that he found the whole situation between him and the Kansas City star duo to be, quote, kind of silly and not a big deal. However, Kelce acknowledged the gamesmanship from Tucker and made it clear that he and Mahomes didn't find humor in the situation, saying, quote, "Justin came out and he said it was more of a joking gesture, kind of a fun competitive moment, and I get it. He was kind of winking at me, being a dick about it, trying to get under the skin. I get it, but me and Pat, we were having the same mentality for this game all week long, man. And it was, you got to go in there and have the right mindset, and we just weren't in a joking mood. We were ready to get after it." Kelce went on to add that he understands if some people think he took things too far by tossing away Tucker's belongings, but he has no regrets about doing so, saying, quote, "Justin, sorry if we took it to a level that you didn't think you would get to, but if you're going to be a dick, I promise you I can one-up you every time, dude." I'm not a big Travis Kelce fan because of him shilling for Pfizer and selling people poisonous vaccines, but this is funny, and I do have the same attitude as him. Maybe not on this topic, but in general. During an appearance on the Pat McAfee show, Kelce revealed that he, quote, 1,000% would have gotten a 15-yard penalty had Tucker missed a crucial field goal during the game. Tucker was never put in that position, however, and ultimately Kelce, Mahomes, and the Chiefs got the last laugh. Let's see what we got now. We are going to transition back to some NBA. What a career this man has had. Three-time NBA All-Star Marc Gasol announced his retirement from basketball. Gasol has been playing for Basket Girona in Spain since 2021. He last played in the NBA for the Los Angeles Lakers in 2020-21. The brother of Hall of Famer Pau Gasol, Marc began his career with FC Barcelona and CB Girona in Spain before joining the Memphis Grizzlies in 2008. He spent his first 11-plus seasons in Memphis, winning Defensive Player of the Year in 2013 and earning three All-Star selections. The Grizzlies traded Gasol to the Toronto Raptors midway through the 2018-19 season, and he played a pivotal role in bringing the franchise its first ever NBA championship. He returned to Toronto for the 2019-20 season before signing with the Lakers in free agency during the 2020 offseason. The Lakers sent Gasol back to Memphis in September 2021, and the Grizzlies waived him 5 days later, allowing him to return to Spain to finish out his professional career. Gasol founded Basket Girona in 2014, and his presence in the lineup helped the club move up to Spain's first division in 2022-23. The Grizzlies plan to retire Gasol as number 33 at a future ceremony. He finishes his NBA career with averages of 14 points, 7.5 rebounds, and 3.5 assists a game. I firmly believe that he is a future Hall of Famer. He should be, you know, considering what he did, in the NBA with the Raptors helping them win a championship.
I believe he won a championship with the Lakers in the bubble, if I'm not mistaken. But even if not, you know, what he did over his whole career with the Grizzlies, and then obviously the national team with Spain, I think he's a Hall of Famer, no doubt. We're going to talk about some F1. This is not a sport that I follow, but this news was too big to not talk about. Legendary Formula One driver Lewis Hamilton will leave Mercedes-Benz at the end of the 2024 season and join Ferrari. Mercedes and Hamilton confirmed the split on Thursday. Quote, "I have had an amazing 11 years with this team and I'm proud. I'm so proud of what we have achieved together. Mercedes has been a part of my life since I was 13 years old. It's a place where I have grown up. So making the decision to leave was one of the hardest decisions I have ever had to make. But the time is right for me to take this step and I'm excited to be taking on a new challenge. I will be forever grateful for the incredible support of my Mercedes family, especially Toto for his friendship and leadership, and I want to finish on a high together. I am 100% committed to delivering the best performance I can this season and making my last year with the Silver Arrows one to remember." Ferrari confirmed the agreement with Hamilton shortly after the announcement of his impending Mercedes exit. Scuderia Ferrari tweeted, "Team statement, Scuderia Ferrari is pleased to announce that Lewis Hamilton will be joining the team in 2025 on a multi-year contract." According to Sky News, Hamilton signed a two-year, £100 million contract with last summer to stay with Mercedes through 2025, but the team confirmed he exercised an opt-out after the 2024 season. He has been a Mercedes driver for the past 11 years. This is massive. Hamilton will replace Carlos Sainz Jr. at Ferrari, who confirmed that he will part ways with the team at the end of his contract following the 2024 season. Sainz finished 7th in the F1 standings last season, and he has finished 10th or better in each of the past 7 seasons. Hamilton will be teammates with Charles Leclerc, who finished 5th in the standings this past season following a second-place finish in 2022. According to Sky News, Hamilton told ESPN last May that he would be lying if he said he didn't ever think about driving with a team other than Mercedes, before adding, "I thought about and watched the Ferrari drivers on the screens at the track, and of course you wonder what it would be like to be in red." Hamilton made his F1 debut in 2007 for McLaren, and after 6 seasons with that team during which he won an F1 title, he made the move to Mercedes in 2013. It was there that Hamilton established himself as one of the greatest drivers in Formula 1 history, winning 6 championships in 7 seasons from 2014 through 2020. Overall, the 39-year-old is first on the F1 all-time race wins list with 103, putting him well ahead of Michael Schumacher's 91 wins in second place. Hamilton is also tied with Schumacher for the most career F1 points titles with 7. While Hamilton's place in F1 history is undeniable, the past couple of years have been a bit of a struggle for him and could explain his decision to leave for Ferrari. Hamilton finished 2nd in the points in 2021, followed by 6th in 2022, and 3rd last season. While he won 8 races in 2021, he has no wins in 2 seasons since then. That has put Hamilton in unfamiliar territory, as he has won at least 1 race in each of his first 15 Formula 1 seasons. But even if he wins nothing else from this point on, he is an all-time great, and I'm very excited to see what Lewis Hamilton does with Ferrari. With that, we are now going back to the NFL. In the second major hire of the Josh Harris era, the Washington Commanders have landed Dallas Cowboys defensive coordinator Dan Quinn as their next head coach. Interesting that they hired him despite them giving up damn near 50 points to the Green Bay Packers in the divisional round. Adam Schefter reported the Commanders will hire Quinn to replace Ron Rivera. The hiring came after it seemed like the Commanders missed out on their top choice. As I mentioned earlier, the aforementioned Detroit Lions offensive coordinator Ben Johnson is staying with the Lions. Harris's first move came on January 12th when he came to an agreement with San Francisco 49ers assistant GM Adam Peters to take over as the Commanders GM. It was a bit of a surprise because Martin Mayhew, who had been Washington's GM since January 2021, was still employed by the team. John Keim of ESPN reported on Wednesday that Mayhew is expected to remain with the Commanders in a role that has yet to be announced. So that is that. Dan Quinn is the new coach of the Washington Commanders, and I think it's actually a solid move for everyone involved. Let's see what we got now. We got some NBA, a very interesting trade here. The Memphis Grizzlies are trading center Steven Adams to the Houston Rockets, according to Woj of ESPN. Memphis will receive Victor Oladipo, who is somehow still in the NBA, and 3 second-round picks in return. The Grizzlies sought, quote, salary flexibility and draft assets with the trade, according to Woj. Adams averaged 9 points, 11.5 rebounds, and 2.5 assists through 42 games with the Grizzlies last season before undergoing season-ending knee surgery in October. Oladipo averaged 11 points and 3.5 assists a game while playing off the bench for the Miami Heat in 2022-23. He has not appeared in a game this season after having off-season knee surgery. Adams is 30 years old. That's crazy. I thought he was like 40. He has not played since suffering a PCL sprain in January 2023.
He underwent surgery after attempts to address ongoing knee instability through rehabilitation, though rehabilitation did not work, according to NBA.com. The Grizzlies said at the time of the surgery that the center was expected to make a full recovery ahead of the 2024-25 season. After this season, Adams has a 1 year and $12.6 million remaining on the two-year extension that he signed with the Grizzlies in October 2022. That contract will take up just under 9% of the league cap in 2024-25, according to SpotTrack. Oladipo, meanwhile, is on a $9.45 million player option that makes up the final year of his current deal. He is set to become an unrestricted free agent in the offseason. So an interesting trade. I mean, you don't really see teams trading injured players for each other very often, but there you go. As I mentioned earlier, the NHL All-Star Game is around the corner and the rosters are set. The 2024 NHL All-Star Game player draft made its highly anticipated return on Thursday night, and it did not disappoint. For the first time since 2015, the league's four All-Star captains and their celebrity captains drafted their teams from this year's pool of star-studded talent to compete in the All-Star Game at Toronto's Scotiabank Arena. The four teams are captained by Toronto Maple Leaf star Austin Matthews, Edmonton Oilers star Connor McDavid, Colorado Avalanche veteran Nathan MacKinnon, and Vancouver Canucks defenseman Quinn Hughes slash New Jersey Devils forward Jack Hughes. While the league has turned away from division-based rosters, this year's All-Star Game will remain a 3-on-3 format with 10-minute halves. Team MacKinnon will take on Team McDavid in Game 1, and Team Hughes will take on Team Matthews in Game 2. The winners of the first two games will compete in a third game to determine the All-Star Game winner. With the festivities set to kick off in Toronto this weekend, here's a look at the rosters for each team. Team Matthews, who will be wearing blue jerseys, the captains. The captain is obviously Austin Matthews. Co-captain is Leafs defender Morgan Rielly, and the celebrity captain is Justin Bieber. The roster is William Nylander Leafs, Mitch Marner Leafs, Clayton Keller Coyotes, Matt Barzell Islanders, Philip Forsberg Predators, Alex DeBrincat Red Wings, Vincent Trocheck Rangers, Jake Ottinger Stars, and Igor Shesterkin Rangers. Team McDavid will be wearing white. Captain is obviously Connor McDavid. Co-captain is his teammate, the Nazi Leon Draisaitl, and the celebrity captain is Will Arnett. I don't know who the fuck that is. The roster is David Pastrnak, Bruins, Robert Thomas, Blues, Sam Reinhart, Panthers, Boone Jenner, Blue Jackets, Nick Suzuki, Canadiens, Tomas Hertl, Sharks, Rasmus Dahlin, Sabres, Connor Hellebuck, Jets, and Sergei Bobrovsky, Panthers. Team MacKinnon will be wearing yellow. The captain is Nathan MacKinnon. Co-captain is Cale Makar. The celebrity captain is the beautiful Tate McRae. And the roster includes Sidney Crosby from the Penguins, Kirill Kaprizov Wild, Sebastian Aho Hurricanes, Tom Wilson Capitals, Travis Konecny Flyers, the new Vancouver Canuck, former Calgary Flame, Elias Lindholm, Oliver Bjorkstrand Kraken, Alexander Georgiev Avalanche, and Jeremy Swayman Bruins. And lastly, Team Hughes will be wearing red jerseys. They are captained by Vancouver Canucks defender Quinn Hughes and New Jersey Devils forward Jack Hughes, who will not play due to injury. And the assistant captain, you know, in lieu of Jack Hughes, is Quinn Hughes' Vancouver teammate, Elias Pettersson. The celebrity captain is Michael Bublé. And the roster includes Nikita Kucherov, Lightning, Kyle Connor, Jets, Brady Tkachuk, Senators, Jesper Bratt, Devils, Brock Besser, Canucks, JT Miller, Canucks, Frank Vatrano, Ducks, Thatcher Demko, Canucks, and Cam Talbot, Los Angeles Kings. Each team will be paired with a head coach. The four head coaches were selected based on which team sits atop each division in the league standings. So they are Rick Bowness Jets, Rick Tache Canucks, Jim Montgomery Bruins, and Peter Laviolette Rangers. So here's a look at the All-Star Weekend schedule. Thursday, February 1st is the Professional Women's Hockey League 3-on-3 Showcase at 5 a.m. Eastern on ESPN+. The PWHL Showcase will see 24 players from the league's six teams compete in a 20-minute 3-on-3 competition. The rosters are loaded with talent and feature, combined 146 Olympic medals, 46 World Championship medals, and 17 NCAA Division I championships. Some of the player highlights include Kendall Coyne Schofield, Hillary Knight, Marie-Philippe Poulin, Sarah Nurse, and Alex Carpenter. On Friday, February 2nd, is the NHL All-Star Skills Competition at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on ESPN and ESPN+. It will feature 12 players competing in various events that include fastest skater, hardest shot, stick handling, passing challenge, one-timers, shooting, one-on-one, and an obstacle course for the chance to win $1 million. The 12 players participating are Connor McDavid Oilers, Austin Matthews Leafs, Nathan MacKinnon Avalanche, David Pastrnak Bruins, Cale Makar Avalanche, Leon Draisaitl Oilers, Matt Barzell Islanders, Nikita Kucherov Lightning, William Nylander Leafs, JT Miller Canucks, Elias Pettersson Canucks, and Quinn Hughes Canucks. And then finally, the 2024 NHL All-Star Game will take place on Saturday, February 3rd
at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 p.m. Pacific on ABC and ESPN+. That said, you might be shocked. I know we never talk about it, but we got more football to talk about, baby. You already know. The Las Vegas Raiders are expected to hire former Arizona Cardinals head coach and current USC senior offensive analyst Cliff Kingsbury to be their next offensive coordinator, per Adam Schefter of ESPN. NFL Network added the Raiders were, quote, locked in on the 44-year-old. He also noted that no deal is in place yet, but that it's expected to get done. UCLA head coach and ex-Philadelphia Eagles and San Francisco 49ers head coach Chip Kelly was reportedly in the running for the job, who added that he appeared open to a return to the NFL. However, Raiders head coach Antonio Pierce decided on Kingsbury for the position. Aaron Wilson of KPRC2 Houston reported earlier Thursday that Kingsbury was the front runner for the job. I'm not sure why some random-ass news reporter in Houston knows about Cliff Kingsbury, but there's that. The silver and black ripped the interim tag off Pierce's title and made him the team's full-time leader on January 19th. He took over the fired head coach Josh McDaniels after 8 games. The team also notably parted ways with offensive coordinator Mick Lombardi and general manager Dave Ziegler. So I think this is a great move for, honestly, for everyone involved. I think someone like Cliff Kingsbury is better as a offensive coordinator rather than a head coach, personally. Even though I can't say that he was necessarily a bad head coach in Arizona, but I don't think it was the best situation for him. And like I said, I think being a coordinator would be great for him. Let's talk about some baseball. This is a massive trade. It came completely out of nowhere, and it seems that the Baltimore Orioles' new ownership is wasting no time at all. The rebuild has begun for the Milwaukee Brewers, who have traded 2021 National League Cy Young Award winner Corbin Burnes to the Baltimore Orioles. Milwaukee will receive shortstop Joey Ortiz, left-hander D.L. Hall, and the 34th pick in the 2024 draft in exchange. Ortiz is Baltimore's number 6 ranked prospect per MLB.com. Burnes might be the most impactful pitching addition for any team this winter. He has posted a 2.86 ERA in 622.1 innings over the past 4 seasons and struck out at least 200 hitters every year since 2021. Since the start of the 2020 season, the 29-year-old ranks second among all pitchers with 17.9 Fangraphs wins above replacement. He's been named to the National League All-Star team in each of the previous 3 years and finished in the top 10 of NL Cy Young voting in 4 consecutive years. This offseason began on an interesting note for the Brewers when Craig Counsell left his position as manager to take the same job with the Chicago Cubs, their division rivals. There was some indication prior to the Counsell move that Milwaukee was going to be subtracting payroll. Mark Canha, who was acquired from the New York Mets during the season and had an $11.5 million team option for 2024, was traded to the Detroit Tigers. Brandon Woodruff was shockingly non-tendered as the status for next season is in doubt due to shoulder surgery he had in October. If the Brewers were going into cost-cutting mode but wanted to shorten their turnaround time to become a playoff contender again, trading Burnes was the best move they could have made. Burnes is entering the final year of his arbitration and is projected to earn $15.1 million. Considering Lance Lynn, who had a 5.73 ERA and allowed 44 homers in 183.2 innings last season, got $11 million on a one-year deal from the St. Louis Cardinals, the Orioles paying an estimated $4 million more for one of the best pitchers in the world is an absolute steal, no doubt. Given how low the odds were that Milwaukee would re-sign Burnes to a long-term deal, this isn't a bad move for the organization at all. Despite making the playoffs 5 times in the past 6 seasons, this iteration of the club looks like one that has maxed out its potential. And with that said, we are going to talk about more NBA to close out this episode of the one and only Sean Sports Podcast. Just give me 1 second here. Let's go. New York Knicks guard Jalen Brunson, Golden State Warriors guard Steph Curry, and Los Angeles Clippers forward Kawhi Leonard headlined the 2024 NBA All-Star Reserves, which were announced on Thursday night. So the starters in the Eastern Conference are Giannis Antetokounmpo, Bucks, who's the captain, Joel Embiid, 76ers, Jason Tatum, Celtics, Tyrese Halliburton, Pacers, and Damian Lillard, Bucks. The reserves are Jalen Brunson, Knicks, Donovan Mitchell, Cavaliers, Jaylen Brown, Celtics, Bam Adebayo, Heat, Julius Randle, Knicks, Tyrese Maxey, 76ers, and Paolo Banchero, Magic. In the West, the starters are LeBron James, who's the captain, Lakers, Kevin Durant, Suns, Nikola Jokic, Nuggets, Luka Doncic, Mavericks, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, OKC, Thunder. The reserves are Anthony Edwards, Timberwolves, Steph Curry, Warriors, Kawhi Leonard, Clippers, Anthony Davis, Lakers, Devin Booker, Suns, Paul George, Clippers, and Karl-Anthony Towns, Timberwolves. Brunson was perhaps the biggest omission when the starters were first announced. He finished with the same weighted score as Milwaukee Bucks guard Damian Lillard and lost the tiebreaker since he had fewer fan votes. The 27-year-old is averaging 27 points and 6.5 assists while shooting 42.2% on three-pointers. That is absolutely elite. No question he's an all-star. Philadelphia 76ers guard Tyrese Maxey is another first-timer. As with Brunson, there wasn't much doubt that Maxey would make it thanks to a breakout campaign. Orlando Magic forward Paolo Banchero punched the first of what's likely to be multiple tickets to the All-Star game. The reigning rookie of the year has contributed a lot to the Orlando Magic. In the West, Kawhi is an All-Star for the first time since 2020-21, a drought that's a bit surprising, but it does make sense given how many games he's missed due to injury. The now six-time honoree is averaging 24 points on 53% shooting, including 44% from three. He's joined by his teammate, Paul George, two LA natives, who's putting up 23 points, 5.5 rebounds, and 3.5 assists a game. So the All-Star game will be very fun. And the last thing we're going to talk about on this wonderful episode of the Sean Sports Thought Podcast is the LA Lakers. I mean, I was shocked. I was absolutely shocked that the Lakers beat the Celtics last night. Coming off of two bad losses, you know, in Atlanta and in Houston, they somehow knock off the Boston Celtics, who coming in were the best team in the NBA, had a record of 22-2 at home. I mean, absolutely ridiculous. 22-2 at home, had all their players, no injuries. They had Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Kristaps Porzingis, the whole thing. The Lakers, meanwhile, did not have LeBron James nor Anthony Davis. They beat the Celtics somehow, who are now 37-12. I mean, that's an insane record. The Lakers improved to 25-25. D'Angelo Russell didn't even have that good of a game. He shot terribly, shot 5 of 20, 16 points, 8 rebounds, but he did have 14 assists. 2 rebounds shy of a triple-double in 39 minutes, 2 steals and a turnover. Torian Prince was solid in 38 minutes. He had 11 points, 8 rebounds, 2 assists, 5 of 10 shooting, 1 block and a steal, no turnovers. Austin Reeves had the game of his life, 32 points in 35 minutes, 2 rebounds, 3 assists. He shot 10 of 18, 7 of 10 from 3, 70% from 3, absolutely insane. 5 of 7 from the line, no blocks, no steals, no turnovers. Jackson Hayes really stepped up in Anthony Davis's absence. 16 points, 10 rebounds, that's a double-double, 2 assists, shot 6 of 8, that's elite. Also had 3 steals and no turnovers. Jared Vanderbilt unfortunately got injured in the first half, but he was very good in the 16 minutes he did play, scoring 10 points, grabbing 7 rebounds, dishing out 2 assists, shooting 3 of 7, and getting 3 steals as well. Off the bench, Rui Hachimura was great, 15 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists, didn't shoot that well, but also had a block. Max Christie in 23 minutes, 9 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and a steal. Christian Wood in 19 minutes, 4 points, 4 rebounds, and 1 assist. Jalen Hood-Schifino had 1 point in 1 minute. It was a free throw, and that's the Lakers. As for the Celtics, Jason Tatum, not a very good game. I mean, he did have 23 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, but he shot 8 of 21. That's not very good for him. 5 of 10 from 3. That's great, but a block, a steal, 2 turnovers. Derek White had a game to forget. Only 9 points, 4 rebounds, 6 assists in 33 minutes, shooting 4 of 11, 1 of 5 from 3, 2 blocks, and 2 turnovers. Kristaps Porzingis was great. He was efficient. 17 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, 7 of 15 shooting, but he was 1 of 7 from 3, so that is not good at all. But 5 blocks and a steal, 3 turnovers. Drew Holiday had a game to forget. 8 rebounds, 7 assists, 7 rebounds, 4 turnovers, no blocks or steals. Jaylen Brown, 8 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists, a very Draymond Green-like stat line, 4 of 12 shooting, 0 of 3 from 3. I mean, when Drew Holiday and Jaylen Brown combined for 16 points, 15 rebounds, 14 assists, and they shoot a combined 8 of 21, 0 of 5 from 3, a combined 7 turnovers, and only 1 combined stock, that's blocks and steals. So, terrible games from Drew Holiday and Jaylen Brown. Porzingis was the only starter with a good game for the Celtics. Al Horford, you know, who used to be a starter, is now on the bench since the arrival of Porzingis. In 24 minutes, 6 points, 9 rebounds, 1 assist, 2 blocks and a steal. The Celtics' best player, I would argue, was Sam Hauser, as he was extremely efficient and elite. In 23 minutes, he scored 17 points, grabbed 3 rebounds, no assists, but he shot 6 of 11, 5 of 9 from 3. So, ladies and gentlemen, what a win for the Lakers. I love being a Laker fan, even though the losses are painful. Ladies and gentlemen, this is all we have for this episode of the Sean Sports Thought Podcast. This was episode number 431. Thank you guys so much for listening, and I'll see you guys in the next one. Peace.